Last time we talked about Natan and David, Natan and Bathsheba. Okay, so we can actually pass one of these back to me. Well, maybe the two of you can look on together. Okay. Now, our next story is quite tragic. In fact, it has set up all of our troubles that led to the destruction of the temple, that led to everything else, the troubles afterwards, can be understood as a function of the split of the kingdom. When the kingdom was split, it assured all of the troubles that ultimately came to us through the evil of the northern tribes, the evil of that ended up being Yehuda's problems, the destruction of the temple. We can trace all of that back to what Yeravam ben Nevat did. Mm-hmm. And what Yeravam ben Nevat ended up doing was as a result of what Shlomo did. And the people rebelled. Okay, the presentation I have here before you is to try to ask the question really not raised in the Bible. It's not written out. It doesn't appear to be something the Bible is concerned to tell us. What was in the minds of the people to so quickly rebel against Shlomo? They said that the taxes are too high. Really? Is that what can cause a civil war in a nation? High taxes? Is that where America is today? That's all just taxes? They said you have burdened us with your building and your and Shlomo made us into a world class nation. That's what you rebel against? What do you think?
Under David, the one part of the country was fighting the other part of the country with Absalom.
Yes,
saying is they have a history of uh-huh. splitting and making up, and splitting and making up, fighting each other.
Okay, with David, it's important to understand that Absalom's revolt, at least according to Abarbanel and that school, is that since the revolt starts with the words, and it was after 40 years, this means that Absalom's revolt is at the very end of David's kingdom, right? And it wasn't so much to that Absalom wanted to kill David. Absalom wanted to make sure that he would be chosen as the next king. I mean, according to this, Avshalom, Sheva ben Bichri, and Yadon Yahu is one right after the other. Right? I'll take a moment. What happened was that Achitophel turned it into a rebellion against David. It was originally a rebellion to assure that I will be the next king. Otherwise, what would make the Israelites join Avshalom against David? David was beloved. Right? Why would they? Because at first it wasn't meant to be against his father. It was Achitophel who turned it into that. And if you look carefully read the story carefully, Achitophel's plan was just to kill David. We don't want a drawn out battle where you fight a lot of people and have to worry about reconstruction afterwards. Just kill David. Finished. Now you'll be the next king. Done. So it didn't work out that way, of course, but that's what Achitophel was the one who turned it into that. But I hear you. I was moving towards that to show, yeah, these people can easily be moved to rebellion, right? When they should have revolted against Shaul's excesses, right? They should have revolted against that. They should have revolted and not agree to kill off the Kohanim and not to agree to go after David and by the thousands. That they should have revolted. That they stayed loyal to the, you know, they went with the program. But yes, we are somewhat of a rebellious people, an impetuous people. And why would anyone go along with this? To split the kingdom the way it was.
If taxation was penurious, if it was extremely harsh, mm-hmm. I could see that. That's what the Romans did, and that was a good
reason. And you know
that
it seems that the author of Malachim Aleph, and certainly Divrei Hayamim, want to bring home the point that Shlomo was excessive. Do you see the way they describe these parties and the amount of oxen they slaughtered every day and the amount of... And there's just the excesses. We read and you see that this has gone too much. This can take down the kingdom. Millie, you had a question?
I know that during the time of Ahasuerus, the kings were chosen in two ways. Either it was Melech ben Melech, or it was Melech that was chosen because, he took over with, power and... Mm-hmm. So I was wondering
Ahasuerus was that second one, according to...
Yeah, the second one. So was it possible that because Shlomo was the son of another king, would that mean that all that money from taxation would actually line his pockets and he'd be able to do whatever he wanted with them and also make laws? So maybe that's why people weren't
I would say we have an interesting contrast. Something that Glenn just brought up is that in chapter 8 of Shmuel Bet, the Tanakh tells us who helped David run the country. In chapter 4 of Melachim Aleph, it speaks about who helped Shlomo run the country. David's list has four names on it. Shlomo's list is an entire chapter. It was a bloated government. You can look at that contrast and see that, this is right now a big issue in this country. I hear all this, and I want to incorporate this into something that...
There's one other possibility. When you have a tribal structure, in a shoftim, you have always a tribal structure.
Right, right.
And you impose upon it a monarchical structure, which lasts only three kings, basically, Saul, David, and Shlomo.
Mm-hmm.
You always feel the tribal structure is willing to split up underneath it. In the Congo, for example, today there are five civil wars based on the underlying tribes which Belgium made into one country. In Mozambique, the Chinese Communist Party and the Russian Communist Party split along the lines of one tribe against another tribe. I think it's the Zulu and the Bantu. Mm. So if the underlying tribal structure never accepted the domination of Benjamin or Ehud, then they split that way, the 10 tribes.
I think Chazal do have an answer for you. The point that the tribes did feel that Yehuda would have a special consideration, not just because of what Yaakov said on his deathbed, but an understanding that throughout Sefer Shoftim, that Yehuda is treated differently, is treated apart, even while Shaul is king. And according to there's a Tosfos in Maseches Sanhedrin that asks, why would Avner do something so foolish as to appoint Ishbosheth king after Shaul was killed? Ishbosheth is not good king material. Everybody knows David is king; it should be king. And in Perek Hay, in Shmuel Bet, when they all do crown David king, they say, David, we knew that you were better as a king even when Shaul was alive. Right? You could Shabbos, so why didn't you say, open the mouth and tell him that? Or at least convince him not to chase after me. But Tosfos asks, what Narishkeit could get into Avner's mind to appoint Ishbosheth king when it was so obvious and clear to every Israelite that the next king should be David?
Yes, but with Ishbosheth, he could be the boss.
Tosfos does not give that answer, but that's probably the pshat. Right? It's probably the pshat. Is that he, and plus, I want to be loyal to my king, right? Avner is Ishbosheth's cousin, so they're close. So obviously, it's but whom do you vote for president? The one who will be better for you, or the one who will be better for the country? Or the one you think can win? Whatever it might be. The in this case, Tosfos answers, and this is for you, Dr. Sidorsky, is that there was a tradition that before Yehuda ascends the throne, that there will be two kings for Binyamin. This tradition is based on the fact that God told Yaakov, "Umelochim mechalotzecha yetzeu." Now, if in Pshat, that means children that you already have will produce kings. But the Gemara darshins, "Umelochim mechalotzecha yetzeu," means kings are yet to be born from you, and only Binyamin was not yet born. So you see that you get that. Found in Gracious Rabbah, and Tosfos makes reference to this Medrash. But according to this, what it means is that when Yaakov told his sons at his deathbed, Lo Yosu Shevet Yehuda, or Binyamin Bein Ksefav Shochein, God shall reside between the shoulders of Binyamin, right? Which means that these two tribes specifically have some kind of special understanding amongst the people. I would forgive anyone, including your recent words, Dr. Skorsky, if they want to move away from this drash. The pshat is, of course, throughout Sefer Shoftim, no leader fights with the entire nation. Right? In fact, practically every one of them complains about that fact. Right? The closest you get to anyone fighting with the entire nation is Gidon, and that's only 300 people. Right? Every single shofet either complains or takes note of the fact that we are not a full nation. Right? It is ironic then. I think we must have raised this early on in the year. It's ironic that when the tribes are mamish fighting and killing each other by the tens of thousands at the end of Sefer Shoftim, it starts with someone cuts an animal into 12 pieces and sends it to, not an animal, I'm sorry, a person, right. and sends it to all the tribes. And one of Shaul's first acts as king is to unite the people in battle to save the people of Yavesh Gilad, who were those women came from for the people of Binyamin to marry. Remember that Shaul came to defend the people of Yavesh Gilad, whose eyes were threatened by the Ammonites. Remember, so by cutting an animal into 12, he wasn't going to cut a person, of course, but by cutting an animal into 12 pieces and say, such shall be done to your cattle if you don't come and unite this nation. So Shaul does that, but it quickly descends. This sentiment of unity did not last very long, and they're ready to they fight a few times in Sefer Shmuel, and here right at the beginning of Sefer Melachim, with beautiful stories. We have very little about Shlomo. There's so much about David, even in Divrei Hayamim. All we have is about Shlomo is building the Beis Hamikdash. A nice story where it was determining who the true mother is. The Queen of Sheba comes by to test him. And there's really precious little until you see, read a little about his excesses, right? Perhaps used to good measure in Sefer Koheles, where in chapter 2 he says, I tried to find meaning in life through hedonism, and it didn't work. It didn't make me any happier in the long run. And who can try this better than I? So don't try it, because no one will ever be able to test this
better than I did.
This measure for happiness better than I did. Miyachusha semi many. So don't try. It's not going to work. It's not going to because after a while you're not going to be able to continue doing this, and it'll only turn to more pain. Machov. So, but what one gets the sense in that attainment of excess, especially given the fact that the precious little the Torah has to tell the king is practically all dedicated to avoiding excess, right? And if it tells him one thing to do, it is to familiarize yourself with the words of Torah. Mm. He's like a philosopher king in the Torah, right? So Shlomo fails miserably on this, and that leads to the dissolution of the nation. What I have before you here on these pages, this is sort of backtracking a little bit, and I'll take your question, hinges upon one simple little statement of the prophet to David. It is the statement, you will not build me this house, but your son will. That's how it appears in Sefer Shmuel, and that's how it appears in Sefer Melachim. Okay, I'd like to read those statements and then define a little about this and see all those psukim in Divrei Hayamim where one word is added. What word? Shlomo. Mm-hmm. Your son Shlomo will build this temple, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, this is now where I'm turning now is that, are you familiar with a Haftorah that starts with these words? V'yotza choter migeza yishai. V'netzer yishav yifrach.
Yishayahu,
chapter 11, and it's the Haftorah of the 8th day of Pesach, because we have one here outside of Israel. In Israel, since they don't have an 8th day of Pesach, there are some communities Zionistic communities, I assure you, that read this Haftorah on Yom HaTzma'ut. Okay? You know, there's really no... you know, they read the Torah reading also on Yom HaTzma'ut, even if it's not a Monday or a Thursday. Hmm. Right? They will read from Parshas Baloscha that speaks about Yom Simchas Chem, Yom HaTzma'ut. Right? They'll read the Torah reading. And then they even have a Haftorah. Right? So this is the Haftorah. So why be Yatzachot Megeze Yishai? Now, from Yaakov we learn that our leaders, our kings, our salvation comes from the tribe of Yehuda. Right? Must it come from David? Right? Maybe the kings of David went wrong. I want to go through Yishai, through a different brother of David. Okay, that's radical. But must it be through Shlomo? Al Yad Ish Ben Parzi. It has to be from Peretz as opposed to Zerach. Right. That leaves open a whole host of people, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Right? Yes.
And if we speak of Mashiach Ben David, who said it must be Mashiach Ben Shlomo?
Right.
Okay. So let's just look at some of these sources here, and this will close, Mamish close our discussion of Shmuel Bet. And I assure you our next topic will be indeed Achi HaShiloni and his role in Jewish history. Okay? All right, so we start off on the first page. We put a one at the bottom. It says Shmuel Bet Perek Zion. Mm-hmm. We've spoken about this many times. The prophet erred in telling David that whatever you want to do, you will be able to do. Mm-hmm. So that when David asked to build God a temple, and the prophet says, it's a good idea, you know, no one ever thought of doing that. If you would ask, why didn't anyone think of doing that? It's one of the mitzvahs of the Torah. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
So Radak, actually, at the end of Shmuel Bet, says, we were punished for not. Why didn't we? So that's a good question to ask on this past week's right. Parsha. The Torah says, V'asuli mikdash v'shachanti b'socha. It's grad if it says, L'shichno sidrushu v'asa shama, go to a place. Hey, that's a mitzvah on all of us. It's called Aliyah L'Regel. But whose mitzvah is it to asuli mikdash? Are we all mevatel this mitzvah by not assuring that there's a temple in Jerusalem to offer sacrifices? Or
only a leader can do
is it
that.
The mitzvah of the king?
Right.
So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that there are three mitzvahs that are intertwined. Appointing a king, defeating a malik, and building a base of mikdash. In that order. You will not be able to build a base of mikdash unless you have a king. And you won't be able to build a base of mikdash unless you destroy a malik. And you won't be able to destroy a Molech unless you have a king. This is why no one in Sefer Shoftim was ever commanded to destroy a Molech. Why not? That's a 450-year history. Why not? Because they couldn't. They could barely make their way with the fractious nature that they exhibited, right, to take care of Ammonites. They're certainly not going to be able to finish off a Molech. You need a king. You need whoever could unite the people the way Shaul did. That man is going to be commanded to destroy Amalek, and he was shortly afterwards. Mm. One has to assume that had he succeeded in doing so, he would have built the base of Mikdash. It was in his land. Mm. Mikdash is in Binyamin. Right? Okay, but it was not meant to be. So, David expresses the desire to do so, and the prophet tells him, finally, someone's going to do this. Right? Then he has the unfortunate task of telling him the next day. We talked about this. It's a lot of questions here. Why did the prophet make a mistake? Aren't you a prophet? Don't you know whether David should do it or not? Right? And then David never says, well, why not? You told me I could. What did I do wrong? And furthermore, in Shmuel Bet, nowhere does the prophet ever tell him what he does wrong. Only in Divrei Hayamim, it says, this is in retrospect, Divrei Hayamim is written 800 years later, 600 years later, all right? So, I'll leave that aside right now, but he just says that you will not do this, your son will. David's response is magnanimous. David could, I guess, you know, he's the king, he's used to getting his way, I guess, right? certainly up to this point. And David and the prophet just tells him, your son will. Okay, from here we learn the famous derived that the person is never jealous of their child. Whatever my child achieves, I mean, there could be exceptions to this, of course, but whatever my child achieves is a reflection upon me, and I take pride in that. Yes.
You know what I thought? What if David would have engaged in argument with Hashem and be like, oh, you told me not to? I'll build it anyway. And if he would have built it anyway, maybe he would have given a reason to Hashem to protect the Beis Hamikdash.
Okay, David more. Actually, I don't know if this entails cheating, but David, as far as Divrei Yamim is concerned, did practically build it. He did everything but build it.
Yeah.
Which is why Shlomo was able to do it so quickly. You look at Divrei Yamim, and we talked about this a few weeks ago already. So, 7 or 8 prokim dedicated to all of the preparations David made to put things all ready to go. Okay, you get the credit for finishing it off. All right, so this is what appears in Shmuel Bet Perek Zayin, and he says, what he tells him, look at Pasuk Yud Bet, I underlined it. Okay? Ki imlu yamecha v'shachavta es avosecha. When your days are filled and you sleep with your fathers, v'akimosi es zaracha acharecha asher yitzei mimeecha v'akinosi es mamlachto. Your seed that comes after you, your descendant, I will establish his kingdom, hu yivne bayis lishmi. He will build my house. He doesn't say who it is. He just says, your descendant. Now, he says, Zaracha acharecha asher yetzei mimeecha. What is the implication of this? We did about 10 minutes ago in a Tosfos about Avner. What is the implication of this? What? He's not yet born.
Right,
this next king at this point is not born yet.
Mm-hmm.
That is significant, because he says, "Asher yetzei mimeecha." He should have just said, "One of your sons will build it." By saying "Asher yetzei mimeecha" means that this child is not born yet. Okay. Who yivne bayis lishmi? David's about 40 years old already. V'chonanti es kisei mamlachto ad olam, ani yehal lo'av, v'hu yehal li lebein. All right. I'll be like him, a father. He will be like for me, a son. Just for good measure, I have to say the rest of this pasuk, even though it's not on this page. It says, and if he turns against me, I will afflict him with the afflictions of man, and I will punish him, and I will give him tochacha, and he will suffer the indignities of my punishments if he turns against me, the way a father would to a child, right? It's crucial. Just you should all be equipped to know this. Tehillim chapter 89 is a pasuk that says God tells his king, you are my son. I have given birth to you. I will afflict you with afflictions. If you turn against my word, I will. Using all the same words as here. It's a God talking to David. And if anyone, anyone in the train this summer where they all step out, you know, as they stay, they try to argue with people about this. This is their day. They love this point, chapter 89. Just open up a Shmuel Bet Perek Zayin and say, you be careful here, because the person who is suffering this suffering for, right, is if the person turns away from the Torah, nowhere here does it say, or in chapter 89, does it say anything about the suffering to atone for someone else's sins, mm-hmm. Right? So if you want to agree that he suffered, then because he was sinful, right? Because that's what you want to have your theology about what he suffered for, that's fine, but don't point to tell him chapter 89, and don't point to this, because this is a whole different situation. God says, I will be his father, he will be like me to me a son. Who says that this is clear what's talking about? It's talking about David and Shlomo. Right? Okay. All right, I'm just putting it out there. Now, when Shlomo builds the temple and he recounts this, take a look at source number 2.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom source on this page. I underlined it. Vahim Lavav David Avilivnos Bayis L'Shem Hashem, okay, Israel. It was in the heart of David, my father, To build God a house. V'emar Hashem el David Avi. Notice he doesn't want to just say the word David, he has to say David, my father. Right? He's king also, so it's okay, but it's not respectful to just refer to your father by name.
Right.
Yaakov also refers to Yitzchak Avi. Okay, or he says, yeah, no, he just says okay, Yitzchak. we have to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Okay. Alright, so he says, Ya'an asher hayo'im levavcho livnos bayis lishmi, hetivosek yo'im levavecha, rakatolo tivne habayis, kim bincho yotzimi cholatzecha, hu yivne habayis lishmi. You see, in the text of Malachim, Shlomo himself talking, this is now Shlomo talking, he didn't put in the name Shlomo. He could have done that, but he said that would be tampering with the historical record. Right? I know what the prophet told my father. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If the prophet really said the word Shlomo, you don't think Shlomo would have said it there?
Uh-huh.
Right? He, of course, wants everyone listening to believe that he was destined for this. He was born for this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If he was born for this, it's because his mother was the favorite wife of the king. Okay, now turn the page. Now we're talking in Divrei Yom, page 2. On the top it says, the prophet says, this is what God told me. Dom larov shafachta, umilchamos gedolosa sisa. You have spilled much blood and you've made many wars. Lo tivne bayis lishmi, ki domim rabim shafachta arutza utanai. You can't build this. The house is a place of peace. My temple is a place of peace. And you fought too many words. Hine bein nolad lach. Hu yihye ish menucha. You will have a son. He's not yet born. That was implied, as John said before, in Shmuel. It's explicit here in Divrei Yamin. Right? Ish menucha. He's a man of peace. Vani chosilo mikol oivav misaviv. He will not fight any wars like you did. The two reasons for that. David fought all the wars for him, right? That's one. And two, Shlomo was probably the son-in-law of every king in the world. So,
right.
So who's going to fight their son-in-law, right? Ki Shlomo yeyeshmo v'shalom v'sheket etein al Yisrael biyomav. Okay. All the good Hebrew words that refer to quiet are onomatopoetic. There's a few lines in Shacharis where we talk about the beauty of Shabbos, and every other word starts with the letter Shin. There's like 12 or 13 Shins out of 15 words or something. So it's all trying to get us to feel the, okay. All right, so he will be a man of Shlomo Shmo v'shalom v'sheket etein al Yisrael b'yamav. Hu yivne bayis l'shmi v'hu yeli l'bein v'ani ila la'av. Okay. All right, he's my son. Okay, look at the source below it. Okay. So Shlomo, upon building the Beis HaMikdash, tells everybody, right? I'm sorry, no. The next source is actually where Hashem is, where David is speaking now. What I'm about to read does not appear in Sefer Shmuel. Okay? Of course not. Sefer Shmuel wants to end, as does Malachim want to begin, with a full accounting of what happened to David for the rest of his life because of Bathsheba. Divrei Yamim doesn't have that agenda. In fact, Divrei Yamim can't have that agenda because it doesn't even mention Bathsheba. Right? David goes to his death in phenomenal glory. Right? Not like this man who can't be warmed by any garment and has to have a woman come in and tend to him, and, right? And then oblivious to what's happening with his sons. It could be two different perspectives of a similar time frame. The Gemara says that David came to that chilling because of the angel he saw at the end of Shmuel Bet, or because of just a very end of life comeuppance for abusing Shaul's clothing. So clothing won't warm you. Right? Okay, so this is now David talking as he is doing what we just described, putting all of the workings of the Beis Hamikdash in order. Right? So it says, he's speaking now, he says, Ani im levavi livnos beis menucha la'aron b'ris Hashem. V'l'hadom ragle elokim v'achinosi livnos. V'elokim amar li lo tivne b'ayis l'shmi, ki ish mechamos ata v'domim shafachta. V'yivchar Hashem elokei Yisrael ki mikol beis avi liyos l'melech ha'Yisrael la'olam, ki b'Yehuda b'char l'nagid, u'beveis Yehuda beis avi. Uvivnei avi biratzo l'hamlich al kol Yisrael. So David is saying, speaking about where he came from and how he came to rule. Now here's the pasuk. Mikol banai ki rabim banim nasan li Hashem. Right? David must have hundreds of kids. Vayivchar b'shlomo b'ni l'sheves al kisei malchus Hashem al Yisrael. I got to tell you, it's not easy to reconcile Divrei Yamim with Malachim. How old is he when he's saying this? And if he made this statement publicly, is it possible that people would have joined Adoniyahu? Evyatar would have joined Adoniyahu? Yoav would have joined Adoniyahu if David made a statement like this? The only possibility is that he made this statement after that. Right? Okay, the Radak tries to reconcile all of this together and put it into relief, but... But for now, it's not really my goal here. My goal is just to teach you here also. Look at Pasuk Yud, Pasuk Vav. Vayomer li Shlomo bincha, hu yivne beisi v'chatzirosai. Ki v'charti bo li lebein, v'ani elo la'av. That's what all these have in common. God is Shlomo's father. But be careful, Shlomo. If you turn on me, I'm going to rebuke you like a father rebukes a son. Okay? Of course, all of this is happening, in retrospect, that's exactly what happened. And God says, I'm going to give you the ultimate punishment. The ultimate punishment is that everything you built up, you're going to see it destroyed. Now, you've heard of the book Koheles, right? Koheles is a book about Shlomo's disappointment at all the potential and where it ends there, or they inevitably end up going. So, the... Now, I can imagine that Shlomo probably had just as many sons as David, right?
Eight vafega.
Yeah. So Shlomo, the I have to full disclosure. Koheles is in Chamesh Megillos, right? You know that. Mm-hmm. Chamesh Megillos has a brand of targum that's unprecedented in Tanakh. Right, the targum to the Torah. There are plenty of them. Onkelos is 90% the Aramaic word of the Hebrew in the Torah. There are what we call Palestinian or Jerusalem Targumim to the Torah, which are highly midrashic, right? These Yonas and Ben Uziel, you know, Targum Yerushalmi. The Targumim to Nevi'im is there's really just one major one because the Gemara speaks of it and it's very, very popular. It's called Yonas and Ben Uziel, right? Everyone knows that. Targum to Ksuvim, we don't really know any of them. We have no authority to know who wrote any of the Targumim to Ksuvim, especially in light of the fact that the Talmud tells us that there shouldn't be a Targum to Ksuvim. Talmud tells us in the beginning of Maseches Megillah there is no Targum to Ksuvim. So all the books, the last nine books of the Tanakh, I shouldn't say nine, I mean five, eight, 13, the last 11 books of the Tanakh. Okay, whatever they are and whatever the reason the Gemara gives for why there are no Targumim, one thing is clear. The Targum to the five Megillot is, especially Esther, but the Targum to the five Megillot are highly, highly Midrashic. Every Pasuk is four or five times the size Targum as the Pasuk it comes from. The first Pasuk in Koheles is... I should have brought it out here and translate.
No, I mean the Megillos and Hashir Hashinim. I have a Midrash.
With Mikolas Gedolos?
Yeah.
Wow.
For schools.
It's a heavy bag you must have. And it has Koheles too? Amazing.
Avail Havalim HaKol Havalim.
So he starts off the following. I'm going to read it to you. That's great. Thank you. Pitgamei nevua di nabe koheles hu shloma bar David malko dahave birushalayim. Kadchaza shloma malko di Yisrael beruach nevua. These are words of prophecy that Shlomo wrote when he saw Yat Malchus Rechavam Berei Da'asidal Is Plaga Im Yeravam Benevot. When he saw that the kingdom of his son Rechavam was going to split and mostly be taken over by Yeravam Benevot, V'yas Yerushalayim U'beis Makdasha Di'ina Nasidin L'Mechrav, and that Jerusalem and the temple would one day be destroyed, V'yasama Beis Yisrael Di'inu Nasidin L'Miglei, and that his people would ultimately be exiled, and that he attributes this because of my excesses, because of what my son would inevitably do. Now, I explained this some time ago, I think, as sort of a teva, a nature that was ingrained in David, Shlomo, and Rechavam. What was that nature? The nature is what the Talmud says, why the kingdom was split in two. When David said to split the field between Tziva and Mephibosheth, when Shlomo said to split the baby between the two women, and when Rechavam would behave in a similar way and not give enough thought to the request or the demand, if you will, of the delegation, who said, well, we'll serve you, but you've got to lighten our burdens. What man in his right mind doesn't make the right decision there? Well, someone who is always used to just giving orders, right? You don't give me orders, right? So now you should know that at that point, Rechavam was pulling, who knows what this crazy man in Venezuela is going to do? Is he going to start shooting at people? Is he going to start shooting at crowds? Is he going to convince the military to take out tanks to shoot at large crowds, like they did in China, like they did in Russia, right? So I don't know, but that's what Rechavam wanted to do. Uh-huh. Rechavam gathered an army of hundreds of thousands of soldiers to get you. You can't do this to me. What do you mean rebel? What do you mean rebel? Right? We're 12 tribes. So that would have been disastrous. Right? It would have been disastrous for Yehuda, for sure. Thank God that a man of God went down, was told to go and convince him, you can't do this. This is part of God's will. This is, that the tribes be split. Right? And it's not because you're evil, Rechavam. It's because of Shlomo. Right? So I'm giving a pshat of what set it in order. Right? It's that Shlomo saw David behaving in an impetuous manner and not giving enough thought to who really owns the field. It can't be that just because of David's behavior with one field that the whole of Israel is split. No. That reveals a certain teva, you get it? It reveals a certain attitude that pervaded his at least at that point of his kingdom, which made its way to Shlomo, that made Shlomo think he could act the way he did. Right, with his excesses, and then Rechavam behaved in kind, and then we are where we are. So Shlomo writes in Koheles. Thank you so much. This was very helpful. All right. So here in Divrei Yamim, once again, we have now Shlomo really pour. This next source really pours long because it mentioned Shlomo twice. Now turn to page 3. Okay, so here is where Divrei Yamim Perek Yud Zayin, right? This is where the prophet tells David HaMelech, you won't build the temple, but your son will. And here he doesn't mention the name Shlomo. Okay. So one has to wonder, what really was said? This one, the last one that you have on this page, mm-hmm. right, is where the prophet is actually telling him in Divrei Yamim. Now, again, in Shmuel and in Melachim, no name Shlomo appears. In two places in Devarim we read already the name Shlomo appears. But here, when the prophet is speaking to him, it seems that Devarim wants to tell us that the prophet never said the name Shlomo. Hmm. Later, David and Shlomo himself, look at the next source at the bottom of the page. Right? Mm-hmm. Now it's Ozamar Shlomo, Hashem Amar Lishkon L'Varafel. Right? This is now Shlomo talking with when he's building the basement, because he makes a beautiful speech. And Shlomo, when speaking, my father wanted to build this house. Okay, you're right. David said that already, so of course Shlomo's going to say it. David said this, made this speech to the people in Divrei Hayamim. Again, when I said that 15 minutes ago, I said, be careful, this speech does not appear in Shmuel. All right? This speech appears in Malachim. Right? This speech, the one at the bottom of the page, appears in Sefer Malachim. Mm-hmm. When Shlomo built the temple and said, my father wanted to build this place, and he couldn't, and the prophet said he can't, but his son will. He didn't say the name Shlomo there. Mm-hmm. I understand why he might want to, but he didn't. They could go back to the original email and see the word Shlomo wasn't there. Right? Mm-hmm. He didn't change the record. Right? In Divrei Hayamim, everyone's changing the record. Right? Why would this be? So I would submit to you, because I think that certainly in light of what Yeshayahu says, V'yatzachot migeza Yishai, and these stories of where the kingdom went, and by this time the kingdom of Yehuda has been destroyed. You know, there's the descendant called Zerubbabel; he's the grandson of one of the kings, who Haggai says is going to serve on God, some kind of throne. But now I think it's the way of Divrei Hayamim to sort of just put a word here and there, so that everyone knows, no, wait. It goes through Shlomo. We're not skipping over Shlomo. Even though we say Mashiach ben David, but I just want to make sure everybody knows. Shlomo is building this house. Shlomo is not being pushed aside. And the bottom of page 3, you have the same thing. Okay? All right, now, I just want to close this discussion with another discrepancy between Shmuel and Divrei Hayamim. In Sefer Shmuel, at the end of the book, David purchases a mountaintop from the Jebusite king. Mm-hmm. It says he paid 50 shkalim for it. Right? And in Divrei Hayamim, it says he paid 600 shkalim for it. Now that can't be explained as inflation. Mm-hmm. Divrei Hayamim is supposed to tell it as it was, right? What's the ratio between 650?
Two.
Oh, so now you see why.
Each gate.
David wants to make sure that each tribe is included in this place. And Chazal actually tell us that Yerushalayim is like the UN in New York. Yerushalayim does not belong to any one tribe. It's physically between Binyamin and Yehuda, no doubt. But it actually belongs to all the tribes. Mikol Shvatecha. They're halachas. There's a big mission in Avos to Rabbi Nosson that collects about 15 different halachas that are nogea to the fact that Jerusalem is not really a one of the tribes. 15 things that you might do in other areas of Israel that you can't do in Jerusalem because it doesn't belong to any tribe. Right? So, all right, so I want to end up with an Agadah. What time? How much time?
8:52.
Okay, so there's a pasuk, a parak in Tehillim. It's a parak Kuf Lamed Beis, I believe. Let me do some of the lines. It's a beautiful parak if you love Jerusalem. Okay. There's another parak a little earlier that says, "Samachti ba'omrin li beis Hashem neleich, amdosu yiraglenu b'sharayich Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim ha'benu yoki ir shechub lo yechdav, shesham alu shvotim shifteya edus l'Hashem l'odos l'Hashem Hashem." Wait a second. When was this written? Because all of David's lifetime, the place where they were going to three times a year was Givon. I can't tell you otherwise. He brought the Aron to Jerusalem, right, where there was a tragedy, the man touched it, he died, but the place where people would go three times a year for what we call a pilgrimage, what we call Aliyah L'Regel, right, was in Givon. Even in Shlomo's day, it was in Givon until he built the Beis HaMikdash. So what is he saying here? So look at the drash on page 5. This is a medrash found in Yerushalmi Brachas. God said, when your days are full, your son will build me this house. So the Gemara says, Ein dor she'ein bo leitzanim. Every generation has their leitzan, clown, or mockers, scoffers.
Where is this?
The underlined portion that's on the page.
Drash out ha-ha-chamim.
Yeah. I think that the nature of this drash is that God says, "Ki yimlu yamecha," when your days are full, then the Beis HaMikdash will be built. So the Medrash says, "Why do you have to fill out his days? If the Beis HaMikdash has to be built by David's son, God, why don't you just strike David now, and the temple will be built sooner?" Right? Why do you have to? What do you mean, "Ki yimlu yamecha"? Right? Like what God tells Moshe, look, I want you to take vengeance on the Midianites and then you're going to die. So Moshe says, okay, I'll take vengeance in 30 years from now. No problem. Right? No, Moshe goes right away and does it. So then you can gather yourself back to your people. So here, so the Medrash is asking, why didn't God just take David right away? I mean, if we have to wait for David to die to build this temple, so it's because his son is going to do it. What did you have to say? Alright, anyway, so look what's happening. Mayu Pritse Hadorosin. What were those scoffers? Hayuhochin Eitzel Chalonosav Shal David. They would come up to his window as if though you can get right up to the window of the king. From Rimlo. Of course, this is just a possible interpretation of these words. David, Emosayiv Nebeis HaMikdash. David, when are we going to finally build the temple? When will we be able to go to God's house? He said, even though these people are trying to anger me, let them know that I'm actually happy. I'm happy that people are longing and pining to go to God's house. Amar Ribonish, Amar Rav Shem ben Nachman, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu David. David, Yamim Mele'im Ani Monelecha. I'm going to give you full days, David. Eini Monelecha Yamim Chaserim. I'm not going to give you half days, or missing days. Klum Shlomo bin Chaba Nebeis Hamikdash, Lo Lahakriv Bo Korbanos. Chaviv Olai Mishpat Utztaka Shata Osei Yoser Mina Korbanos. Beautiful medrash, right? Mm-hmm. I love the tzedakah and mishpat that you're doing more than the korbanos your son will do. Matam dichsiv oset tzedakah u'mishpat nimchor l'shem mizevach. After all, who wrote that pasuk? Shlomo, right? Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful medrash, isn't it? Mm-hmm. In other words, David, I'm not going to kill you so I can get the temple sooner, right? Rather, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to revel and enjoy the tzedakah and mishpat that you do because that's more important to me than the temple. That's why Parshas Mishpatim is before all those parshios about building the temple, building a mishkan.
But why do you say Shlomo wrote that?
No. Shlomo, no, David. Tell him. No, it's possible.
Okay, just to make sure. Yeah.
And and that's what the Kli Yakar understands. Ve'eli mishpatim asher tosim lifneihem. Get it? Lifnehem. Always teach the Jews that the Mishpatim preceded the Korbanos. So when Yirmiyahu said that Ki lo dibarti esav oseichem velo tzivisi osam biyom hotzi osam eretz Mitzrayim al divrei olav azavach, I did not teach them about Korbanos when I took them out of Egypt. What do you mean? What are we starting to read now for the next 8 weeks? The answer is, right when I took you out of Egypt, I taught you Mishpatim first. I gave you the Decalogue of Mishpatim. Then after that, I told you about the when the people in the time of Yishayahu, Yirmiyahu were giving such primacy to the scrupulous attention to the detail of the sacrificial order, while widows and orphans were suffering, so the prophets spoke out. Okay, all right, that's our treatment.
In the old Moed, there's no.